Live in the land of the ice and snow, my name is Heather, and my guest today is Fanny from France. Bonjour.
Bonjour, Heather.
Well, what part of France are you from?
Well, originally from Lyon, or very near Lyon, but I studied in Paris, and then I lived in Lille, north of France, very near Belgium, for 10 years. So
I think that area is kind of interesting because isn't it very easy to like hop over the border and have dinner in one country? And
It is.
Yeah. And how long ago did you move to Sweden?
I moved to Sweden in 2015, so 10 years ago.
And what made you move?
Okay, well, it's a long story. Oh, you could say it's a love story.
I like that. We have a lot of love stories on here. Okay.
Well, no, but yeah, my husband is Swedish, so that's the main reason why I ended up here in Sweden. And we met in Nepal more than 20 years ago. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a bit...
I'm going to guess you're both travelers and adventurers? Or?
Well, we were volunteers, actually, at that time.
What type of volunteers?
We were both working in two different schools for Tibetan refugees in Kathmandu.
Wow.
So that's why and how we met.
That's amazing. How long did you do that?
Oh, there we were there only for like 6 months. Yeah,
that's still quite a while and a very noble thing to do as well.
It was really giving also, actually. It was a really, I enjoyed it a lot and he did too.
So you met there, fell in love.
Yeah, exactly.
And why did you choose Sweden over France?
Well, first we lived in France for also 11 years in France. And then after a while, well, it was different things. That first, he was looking for a job at that time. He had worked in France for quite a while, but he was transitioning. And I don't know, it just got the idea, why not in Sweden? And also I told him quite regularly, you know, that, yeah, we've been living in France for a few years. So, I mean, at some time I would find it normal to go to Sweden too. And also we got kids, so they were small at that time. And we knew that Sweden was a good place to have small kids, to raise small kids in.
That's what a lot of people say. I agree. I think it's a very good place. What are some things that you're aware of, like between raising kids in France and Sweden? What were the advantages of Sweden over France?
Yeah, so I'll reply to that, but I just wanted to add it. Another thing that made us, move, it was, so on my part, it was that I was a bit fed up with French big cities, because I had lived then in Lyon, in Paris, and in Lille. The three of them are big cities. And in the French cities, unfortunately, they are not that green, you know, so there's a lot of people, a lot of pollution, and not too much... not too many trees, just to put it that way.
Right.
And this is also a thing for the kids, actually, that the life quality in Sweden is really great. And for me, it means the nature around, mainly, not only, but mainly. And we live in a... We don't live in a city, but even in Swedish city, right, cities, the nature is quite present. But anyhow.
That's true, yes. A lot of people who live in Stockholm talk about how it's a very good balance of nature and city. So where do you live in Sweden?
So we live in the south of Sweden, but in the north of the south, you could say. You know, Scania, the region, which is in the south, but the north of Scania. So at the limit between Scania and Småland.
And what would be your closest town that maybe I've heard of?
Well, our town is, it's a small town, a big village. It's called Osby.
Okay.
It's actually on the train line between, for example, Hässleholm and Växjö.
Okay.
So that's a bit closer to Hässleholm.
Oh, what a lovely place to raise kids.
Really?
I would imagine like a lot of nature. Is there a lake around there?
There is a lake. Oh. Yeah, I love that.
Nice.
Lake. And, you know, we can just, we live on a, it's actually a farm, even if we don't, you know, use it as, I mean, it's not our profession, but we live in a farm, and it's really close to the center, so you can bike or go there very quickly, but you can also walk outside directly in the woods, so it's really, I love that.
Oh, I do too. Do you also go hunting for mushrooms, or are they the canterelles around there?
There are, but unfortunately, I don't know anything about mushrooms, and I don't dare.
I understand. I was the same way, and it was only 2 years ago that I had a Swede show me how to find the canterelle mushrooms, to show me the difference between, these are the good ones, these are the bad. Yeah, I was very nervous too, because you don't want to get the wrong mushroom.
You don't really, but good. I will maybe follow your lead at some point.
get a Swede who is very experienced to show you.
Yeah,
that's recommendation. So when your husband lived with you in France, I'm going to guess that he spoke French.
Yeah, well, he learned. He didn't when we met, and I didn't speak Swedish either. So he learned in the beginning. It was a bit tough, but he did, and very well also.
And flipping it around, did you learn Swedish before you moved to Sweden?
I did, but I couldn't speak that well before I moved. I could the basic, And actually, before moving, before we lived together in France, I had come to Sweden for a few months. So there I had taken like a 1 month course, and I tried to do it on myself also and read books and, like children books. So I could speak a little bit, but not very well.
And how is your Swedish now?
It's better, much better.
That's good.
Well, I work in French, in Swedish, and in English. So,
wow, that's impressive. And what brought you to that certain area of Sweden? Is your husband from there?
No, he's not. But it's actually that he found a job there. This is a bit of a coincidence. He found a job there, and he came to try first for some weeks. 2 months, maybe even it was, and he enjoyed it a lot. And then we decided to move, and then that's how it went.
Well, the first times you visited Sweden, or when you moved, did you have anything that you found that was very surprising, or did you make any mistakes with the culture, the language?
Yeah, many.
It can be quite different.
many things, but. I think something that was really striking for me as a French person coming to Sweden was how much everything was, well ordered, or I don't know how to say, but you go to the pharmacy, you take your ticket and you wait, you have your number and you wait. I mean, in France, you just don't. So it was quite interesting. Yeah, there are many, many things, but I was actually, something also I noticed in the beginning, is that I had the feeling that that's really great. Everyone agrees with me, whatever I say, everyone agrees. Whoa. So I felt very flattered happy that, it's easy, to be here. And then quite quickly I understood that, it's not that, but it's just that people won't maybe tell you very directly that, I don't agree.
They're a little too polite sometimes.
Yeah. So they can like even nod or, not say anything against what you're saying, but actually they don't agree.
I have to say, on my culture too, just being from the US and feeling out of place, I think I was also very overly polite when I came. It took quite a few years for me to start speaking up and saying, I don't really like this food, please quit serving it to me, and things like that.
So you were kind of both ways already.
Yeah. I guess so, yeah.
Well, but I recognize certain parts also. We joke sometimes with my husband that he is a bit more French than Swedish, and I'm a bit, I have a Swedish side also for being French, so.
I think we pick up from where we live and we kind of take some of the things that we like or that make sense to us sometimes. Sometimes when we come into a different culture, it's something we realize people do that never occurred to us before. And it will be like, kind of like the way you do this. And just the silly example is taking off shoes in people's homes. Yeah. We never did that in the southern US. And when I got here, it just made so much sense. I'd never thought about it before. And it's like, well, of course, now I'm not going to track mud all through the house. And it pains me to go back to the US and to go into people's houses. I feel like I have to take off my shoes. And they're very much, no, don't take off your shoes. And I'm like, but I have to. I'm going to mess up your carpet.
Yeah. I think of that also when I see movies. That, what, you don't take your shoes off?
Yeah. So you work as a therapist?
Yeah, I actually have two different jobs. So I work as a therapist, so I have my own company. And then I'm also employed part-time in, I don't know if you know, Folkhögskola.
Yes, right.
Folk High School. So I'm a teacher there, 30%.
Okay, so. What do you teach?
Well, I teach subjects that are related to personal development. So okay. It's a bit difficult to translate in English, but the name of the subjects are, for example, inre focus. So, yeah, inner focus, you could say, of course.
Right.
But it's about getting to know yourself better, working with yourself. And is there? I also have a topic which is our subject, which is team building. So it's more the group dynamic, communication, and conflicts, and so on.
And is this something that you did in France, or is it something you've started doing in Sweden?
I started in Sweden since in France I was doing something else, but I started my Gestalt therapy education there, and then I finished it in Denmark because since I live in the south of Sweden, Denmark was a bit closer. And there was this international school in English, which was at that time I couldn't have done it in Swedish, so it was a bit easier. So I started the therapy work in here in Sweden.
You said what type of therapy, but I didn't exactly understand. Could you explain?
It's called a Gestalt therapy. And it's a form of psychotherapy. There are different forms, and it's often described as existential, relational type of therapy. So the idea, I mean, it's a lot of it's a dialogue. Okay, so you're not, the client is not just talking, but you as a therapist are really much engaged in the conversation. And we said that the relation makes a difference, the relation you built with the client. And it's a lot about becoming aware of your patterns and in the moment, you know. So if I become aware of what I'm doing while I'm doing it, reacting in a certain way, as I always do, you know, like a pattern, then I suddenly get a choice. Do I want to do as I usually do? You know, but I can, and it's okay, but I choose it consciously. It's not the pattern choosing for me. Or do I want to try something new? Because this could be, it could be scary, of course, but it could be very giving also to do a bit differently sometimes, to become a bit more flexible and being able to adjust to the situation, because every situation is different and maybe I don't need to behave the same way always.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, this also leads me to why I wanted you on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because you are about to host a workshop.
Yes.
I have to bring it up here. So this workshop, I think, fits very well with a lot of the listeners of this podcast. And it's called Living Fully as an Expat. It's a 4-part workshop and it's online.
Yes.
So I thought maybe you can explain a little what it's about and who it's targeted to.
Yeah. Well, it's open to any person living abroad, you know, so it could be in Sweden, but it could be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But and the idea is to explore the different challenges that you usually face as an expat living abroad, because I work a lot with expats, actually. It's been so, and I work a lot online already. Throughout the years, I came to identify, or, you know, I can see that some topics always come back when someone is an expat. It doesn't have to be exactly the same experience, of course, but topics like, of course, belonging, you know, being uprooted or rooted again, and my identity, who I am. Am I, for example, French in France, Swedish in Sweden, or the relationships, also a very big topic, like do my people back home, or home, if we call it home still, my family, my friends in my country of origin, what kind of relationships do I have with them now? Do I miss them? And do they understand my experience? And then, of course, the relationships in the country where I live. Can I make friends? How easy it is to be integrated, to feel that I belong? Do I feel lonely? Cultural differences, and so on. So,
I could see myself in so many of these things that you're mentioning.
Yeah. I think it's really, I can see it in every person I meet who is an expat. And when you get a family, so then there's your partner. So your partner might be have the same nationality or another one. So here again, it's some new questions. If you are in a binational marriage, of course, or union, and also if you get children, do I want to pass on my language, my culture, and how do I do that? You know, so
those are very important questions. I would add to that that a lot of the times, especially if you're married to somebody from a different culture, raising children, there's a lot of things you don't think of until you get children, in forms of discipline or what we're going to talk to them about, and so many different things that you don't discuss before. And I think that would be helpful to learn how to navigate and respect each other's choices, but also to be able to express yourself and go, oh, I'm not sure I agree with this path. What can we do to compromise?
Yeah, exactly. That's important conversations to have, right? And it's important to address all those topics.
You've hit such a great niche here with having immigrants, expats, because I found so many of us end up needing to see a therapist to get some help, because it's more difficult than you think. A lot of us come here young and we're, I'll just take off and I can do this, no problem. And it's so much. I mean, you really can't understand how something's going to be. It's not the same as traveling somewhere when you decide to move and spend your life somewhere. And everything you mentioned is coming up, leaving people behind, trying to make friends and new people, your identity, like where I come from, I feel like I know how things work. I know what I can say and what I shouldn't say. Mm-hmm. But then over in Sweden, especially at the beginning, mm-hmm. how do I stand up for myself? What is acceptable? How should I present myself, say, in a job interview or meeting other people?
Yeah.
It's all very important.
It is. And you have to kind of struggle for that. It doesn't come naturally. You have to find out how to do.
Right. And I think, like, I've gone to therapists here before, and sometimes I have a lot of trouble because I don't feel like they understand where I'm coming from when I'm coming from a different culture. I may call you up later.
Please do.
Yeah, because this is something that I've looked for a while, is somebody who understands the cultural problems.
I understand that. And so the idea with the workshop is that you meet peers, you know, people who go through the same kind of experiences. And then so you really learn from each other also and inspire each other. And this group dynamic that is really important and that can be really giving and really enriching for the group. So that's when I got the idea of this workshop, I got really excited because I thought, oh, yes, that's really something there.
Yes. And also just to feel that you're not alone, that other people are sharing the same struggles.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there other types of things you'll be covering in the different four parts?
So it's going to be actually divided in three, even if it's four times. And I was thinking of like the first time, maybe more focus on where do I come from, actually, because this explains a lot also. Okay, what's my life story, trajectory, the wounds I carry with me, my values, and how did I end up here? So to understand actually where I am now today. So I think that would be the first one. And number two and three will be where I am now, how I am today. What are my challenges? What are my resources? How can I find more resources in me? Do I feel like I belong or not? And how to get there? What helps me and what doesn't help me in my present behavior? What can I change to get more where I want to be? And the questions may be around the family, if people have family. And the fourth one will be more than the future, next step, both short and long term. Where do I want to go and how do I get there? And I'm saying that that's the main idea about the structure, and I will have some content for every time, like exercises, discussions, but I also wanted to be open for, you know, I'll ask everyone before individually have this first call to know a bit about the needs and what people expect, and so we could also, I mean, it can be adjusted according right. to what people need and want.
That's wonderful. So if people, and you, again, you don't have to be somebody who's moved to Sweden, just somebody, it's for people who've moved to another country and would like to explore these things. So where do people find this workshop?
Yeah, so there's on my website, there's a page mm-hmm. presenting and giving all the information. So my homepage is, it's in Swedish, it's Entid för sig, a time for yourself. So I don't know if I need to spell it or...
But I'll also put links on this podcast okay. episode. So just anybody can check the podcast episode, the notes, and it'll have link to the page in there.
Yeah, that's great. So if you can link directly to the page maybe because...
Sure.
The page of the workshop.
Yeah. Yes.
I want to say it's going to be a small group because, I mean, it has to be that everyone can speak. And
right. Maybe if it's very successful, maybe you'll do another one if
do, of course.
More people interested. Well, is there anything else that you would like people to know about the workshop or...
Well, maybe just that there's no, you know, they don't need to have any kind of experiences in that field, or yeah, they just come as they are. You don't.
Everybody's welcome.
Everybody's welcome, just the way they are. You don't need to have any kind of knowledge or experiences prior to the workshop.
Now, we always kind of round off these podcasts with asking our guests if they have any tips for things to do in Sweden, things that you feel people should check out or see. It can be a restaurant, it can be a town, or just an activity that you enjoy. Do you have any tips? Maybe for your area?
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice to spread it around a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, Skåne, Scania is a really beautiful region, actually.
So that's what I hear.
Yeah. So there's this, the coast on the southeast, mm-hmm. southeast is called Österlen. And it's really beautiful. And there are nice villages like Kivik, or there's this national park, Stenshuvud, it's called, by the sea. So the forest by the sea, and then you climb a little bit and hike. And especially in the spring, it's really, really a nice thing to do.
Oh, that's so nice. Wait, can you go and have picnics? Can you swim?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
But if you want to swim, probably you'll have to wait for the summer.
I would imagine. Unless you've turned very Swedish.
Exactly.
You can do it.
Yes. You can winter bathe anytime.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. And again, I'll put the link to the workshop in the notes for the podcast. And I wish you the best of luck. I really love what you're doing. It's
thank
very
you
important
very much,
to our
Heather.
Community.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Bye.